Thank you for listening to this episode of Parallel Quest. This is a podcast of Steel Lake Studio. Please be sure to head over to our website, steellakestudio.com. Also, we'd like to invite you to be more involved in our community, which you can do by heading over to our Facebook page, Steel Lake Studio. Today's episode is dedicated to one of my personal favorite video games of all time, Final Fantasy VII. Maybe video games are your thing, and maybe they're not. But this episode explores exactly why video games are very important to us at a young age, how they can help us make friends, how the stories can waken our imaginations, and how they can get us through difficult circumstances. Also expect to hear from a wide variety of topics, from impromptu weddings to the ideas of making skate videos. We have another fun one for you. We'll hit the music and get it going. About the stories we love and how they've impacted our lives. I am one of your hosts, Cody Haggard, and alongside me, or maybe better said, across the internet from me, my great friend and co-host, Zach Butler. Zach, how are you doing today?
What is up, man? I am doing great. Got a good gym workout in today. Feeling strong, feeling lean, ready to podcast, man.
I'm super excited to podcast as well. For those of you who have looked at the title of this podcast, we are talking about Final Fantasy VII today, a very, very important topic for me to discuss. I actually kind of was thinking, you know, should we talk about this at another time when we are much better podcasters and we have a better audience? But it's like, we got to talk about it now. This is a super important thing for me to talk about, and I'm really looking forward to it. And Zach, you've never played Final Fantasy VII.
That's right.
You have seen the super duper confusing film Advent Children.
That's true. I've seen that, but I actually, as you were talking there, I do remember playing the beginning of one of them, but there are so many of them that I could not tell you which one it was.
There are a ton of them. There are a ton of them. And so Final Fantasy VII is one of the ones that was late 90s, came out in 97. So it was
definitely not that one. Yeah, it was not that one. This one had, problem is this guy, the guy in this one also had blonde hair, blonde spiky hair.
I think we've talked about this before. I think it was Final Fantasy X, the guy who kind of looks like Meg Ryan.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, you play some like dodgeball game or something in it.
Yeah. That's 10, man.
Yeah, that's the one I played briefly.
But before we get into our main topic, we actually have a segment where we'll just kind of catch up for a second. But if you don't mind, I'm actually going to share with you a little bit about the wild weekend I just had.
Yeah. Tell me about it, man.
So every once in a while, you live life and you do something adventurous. And this past weekend, I did something adventurous. And I thought it was really cool. It was really fun. So we are recording this on a Thursday night. So it was about 8 days ago that I got information from my wife saying, hey, Hope and Lane, they've decided that, oh, by the way, Hope and Lane, that is my wife's sister is Hope. They are sisters and best friends, and Lane is her husband now, but at the time, fiance. So let's continue on with this story. Got a call from my wife on Wednesday, like, hey, what do you think about going to Chicago this weekend? Hope and Lane, they've decided they just want to get married. They want to be married. You are ordained. You can do the wedding. What do you think? I was like, oh, is this what they really want to do? And the answer was yes. So we planned on doing this thing. And so then the next day, and this was on a Thursday, a day that you and I would end up recording later in the evening, I come home and my wife is talking to my sister-in-law. And I was about to say something like, are you guys so excited about this weekend? And then I found out that this was going to be a surprise for Hope that this was her fiance's idea.
A surprise wedding.
A surprise wedding, nonetheless.
That's but they the wanted first to get I've married. Heard of that.
I mean, they wanted to get married. They had their marriage license. They were going to be getting married within the next 60 days, right?
Okay.
And so he wanted to do something romantic, take her to Chicago over, you know, Valentine's Day weekend, but the wedding couldn't be on Valentine's Day because that's corny. And anyway, did the trip, went there. She was extremely surprised to find out that she was going to be having her wedding. But she then became super excited about it because it was like she got to do all the things she really loved, be in Chicago and do all these neat things and get ready. And we did the wedding. There was just a small group of us as family, and it was a lot of fun. It was really cool. And it's the middle of February, so it was also super cold. And I told my wife, I was like, we really need to stop making these trips to Chicago in the middle of winter.
In the winter.
For those of you who don't know, my wife and I met in Chicago. We love the city of Chicago. That's like our city of love. It's romantic to us. I love going back. But the last three times we've been back, it has been the dead of winter. And that is actually my least favorite time to be in any big city. It doesn't matter. It could be Chicago, New York, any city that is close to water, where wind can tunnel through the buildings and it just gets cold. Mm. It's tough. It's rough. But I will say that Midwesterners, people in Chicago, people from Cleveland, people from Pittsburgh, we are tougher than most because the winters are just miserable.
That's right. Brutal. It has hardened us.
But anyway, it was a good time. It was a crazy time. That is probably the first and last time I will ever be involved with a experience like that, because that is not your typical wedding ceremony, but it was pretty neat.
That is a unique one. That I'm not even sure if my wife has had something that unique where it's kind of a surprise wedding. And for those of you guys don't know, my wife is a wedding coordinator and she helps run a venue, but yeah, I don't think I've ever heard that one before. But I'm glad it all worked out and that she was surprised and excited.
Yeah, that was the thing I was a little bit nervous about as we were making the drive, that this is a risky business, but you know, if they decided to push it back to later on in the 60 days, then it would have been fine. But congratulations to Hope and Lane. Congratulations to both of you. You guys will forever have this story and it's going to be great. You're going to tell your kids and your grandkids, and it's really awesome.
That is awesome. Congratulations too from my end.
What about you, man? What's going on? What's going on with Zach?
Oh, man. I finally had a weekend where I did nothing.
I sat home.
It has been so long. I just feel like since December hit, we were gone. We were doing family things every weekend, and then we were doing stuff with friends, and then we had vacation, and that's all well and good, and I love it all, especially spending time with family and friends, and got to go on vacation with my wife and some college friends. But it was nice to have just a relaxing weekend at home. Got some stuff done, got some projects that we're working on kind of headed up. So, it was a good weekend, man. Not much to report, just hung out, took it easy. Sometimes you just kind of need those weekends where you just recharge and lay around
for sure.
And get ready for the next out of travel and events.
For sure, man. Yeah, after we got back from Chicago, I had 2 days off of work. I took off Monday and we get off Tuesdays, and Tuesday was my birthday, and it was nice to kind of just have Monday and Tuesday to just really not do much. And I feel you on that. Like, I didn't do a whole lot. Monday night, I stayed up super late and continued through my file of The Witcher 3, which it's probably still going to take me quite a few months before I'm done. That game is so long, but it's incredible.
That's awesome, man.
But I'm having fun with it. I'm having fun with it.
That's good, man. I'm making my way through Breath of the Wild, too. And
there you go.
It is awesome, dude. It is so good. The problem is, it's kind of a big problem, is I'm currently borrowing a Wii Switch from one of the people at my work. Mm-hmm. So, and she recently asked if she could have it back for the time being. I was like, no, I just got to like the first temple. Like, it's such a big game, dude. It takes you forever to walk anywhere, to get anything done. And I finally made it to like the first big thing. And then she was like, can I have that back? I was like, oh, all that
dude,
work.
Dude, and then if you do end up getting your own Switch, would you have to start the whole game over, right?
Yeah, because the game, that's her game. Man. So I know, all this work. So I'm kind of like hoping, like I told her when she told me that, I'm like, listen, I just got to this, like the first big thing that I've gotten to. Like, can I just beat that and then I can give it back to you? She's like, yeah, yeah, sure. And I was like, so like, when would you be able to like lend it back again to me?
That's awesome.
I was like, how long is this like loan going out? Cause like, I need it back. Cause I need it. I really want to beat this game, man. Like, it's the first video game I've played in a while.
So how long am I going to loan you your own Switch for?
Yeah. So
you give it back to me.
Is there like a return date on this that I can get? Cause I really, dude, it is the first video game I've played in years. Like, a big game like this where it's like an adventure game, not like smaller computer games and stuff. So it's been fun just kind of sinking back into that mindset and that feeling of playing a game like it. So
That's
hopefully fun. I'll get it back and I'll get to beat it, man.
Yeah. I mean, what I would suggest if you have any interest in buying your own Switch before you give it back, I think what you could do, you can make like a Nintendo Switch Online account, I think, and then you could take your save file and put it up in the cloud. I think that could work, but I'm not 100% sure. You'd have to research it more if you could do that, like on somebody else's Switch without like screwing them up or whatever.
Dude, I'm still figuring out the Switch controls still. Why is it, that is this one thing I thought about, why is it that all controllers change their like button configuration around? It's not like so much the joysticks all the time, but like the X, Y, B, and A button are always different. Or if you're PlayStation, you just have X, square, triangle, and circle. But like, I don't know, like why, just keep it the same. Because I keep hitting the button that I think, because I'm an Xbox guy, I played Xbox all my life. So I keep hitting the button that I think is X and it's actually A, and I keep like throwing my stuff that I don't want to throw. So it's messing me up mid game.
Yeah. Now I think there's a couple different reasons why I think it could be. One, it could be because Nintendo has a patent on their controller layout and they kind of want to keep that. Or it could be this. I know that, for example, if you play PlayStation, a lot of the Japanese games, like the Japanese versions of games, they will use the circle button as like the confirmation button. Yeah. Even on early like PlayStation 1 games, you would use circle as like the confirm. And then in North America, we use the X button, right?
Right, right.
So the configuration of how they're used to playing games, I think, might just be slightly different in Japan. And Nintendo has just kept their button layout because they've had that button layout since the Super Nintendo in 1991. So they've just stuck with it.
That B button is like golden in Breath of the Wild, though, because it's just skip all the text, all the talking, just get through it. Because they're like, I just went through this section of the game where you got to follow this dude up this river, and he's the most pointless, like, it's the most pointless dialogue because he just pops out of the water to tell you, hey, there's a bunch of guys that are up ahead. I'm like, bro, I just killed all them. Like, I know. Yeah. I mean, I get it, it's for humor, but like, the whole time he's just like, keep going. But it's like, you got to pause and go through this wall of text to like move on to the next stage. So I'm just like mashing the B button. I'm like, okay, shut up, man. I gotta keep going.
All right, fish guy.
Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna keep going up this hill.
I got no choice.
That's great. It's a good game. It's fun.
It is.
But speaking of games, what we're gonna do is we're gonna continue to experiment with these intro games. And for those of you who don't know, those of you who are unfamiliar with what Steel Lake Studio is all about. So Zach and I, we're guys who are creative types, and we want to do things like write and make story content in our podcasts and things like that. And that's kind of what Steel Lake Studio is. It's this all-encompassing like media adventure for the two of us.
Yeah.
And when you come up with ideas and you come up with stories you want to write or things you want to create, there's also a big pile of trash next to the things you actually follow through with. So we're going to be playing a game called The Trash Bin, where Zach and I will each name a project idea that we had that ultimately we threw in the trash. It might be something that is recycled and revisited, but it could be something that permanently gets scorched. So this game is called The Trash Bin. We won't spend too long on this, but Zach, do you have any that come to mind of things in the trash bin?
Oh, do I? Mine is a trash heap. So one that came immediately to mind when you told me we were going to be doing this one was it started out as a serial idea, and then it kind of morphed into possibly an audio drama idea. And then I was like, well, I'm just going to do it as like a online, like fiction serial idea. So kind of blending the first idea and then moving it so I didn't have to write as much. But the whole storyline was a high school boy who is forced to spend the summer with his estranged, kind of crazy uncle, who travels around the United States and basically keeps all the fairy tales and mythical creatures in check. It's his job. He's called a watcher, and it's his job to make sure that the fairies and the monsters and the fairy tales are not interacting with the real world. And I was like, this is a great idea. Like, this is original, and I'm going to tell it from the point of view of the kid who's going to be writing these journal entries. I had this whole thing planned out. And so then one day I'm like planning out the first episode or the first chapter, and I'm like telling my wife about it, and I'm getting excited. And she's like, oh, that sounds like this movie I watched once. I was like, no, this is not that movie. This is completely different. she's like, no, I've heard this idea before. I'm like, no, this is the first idea. This is the inception of this whole genre. And so then she goes on and finds, I think it's called Once Upon a Time, which is like, unfortunately, a TV series, from my understanding, about pretty much not the same thing, but the whole like fairy world or fairy tale world interacting with the real world.
The connection of worlds,
Yeah. And then like, it was just like, and I was like, oh no. Like, because up to that point, I had like characters sketched out. I had like this whole world. And then I was like, this is way too close. Like, if I start publishing this, like, people can be like, you're just ripping off Once Upon a Time. And I don't feel like fighting that battle. So,
yeah.
Unfortunately, it went to the trash bin.
Ah, man. So here's the thing. Here's my thoughts on that. If it was your original idea and you kind of followed through with it, and you never watched Once Upon a Time, I think it would still be evident that it's not a ripoff. I think ripoffs are more obvious than not.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the whole crossover between worlds, between fantasy and reality, I mean, C.S. Lewis was doing that with Chronicles of Narnia. So it's not like the idea is totally original, right? I mean, these types of story ideas have been thrown out even in like old mythical fairy tales, right? The fairy creatures versus the human creatures and things like that. But
I think there's still a way I could work it, because there's certain aspects of it that I really liked and that I think I could extrapolate and kind of turn into its own thing. But I think just the project scope was way too big at the time as well, because I think I sketched out 3 chapters. And like, I got to a point where I was like, man, I have 5,000 plot lines going on and I don't know where any of them are going. Like, a new one hatched every single episode. and it went a different direction. I'm like, well, I don't even know what the overarching plot I'm telling here. So I think I could, I think if I, there was like a focus, maybe I could, rebirth this idea, but for the time being, it is in the trash bin.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll go ahead and jump over to mine. Ours, this one here is actually a joint adventure by you and I. So I didn't consult you before talking about this, but the truth is you probably haven't thought about this since we decided to scrap the project. So for those of you who don't know, which is probably most of you, we talked about this very briefly, how Zach and I had this very small attempt at a publishing career while we were in high school. And Zach was the creative mind behind our first joint publishing work called The Book of Ladies Men. And then I kind of came up with this idea called The Book of Humor. And we had a marquee character who showed up in The Book of Humor, whose name I actually will not reveal, because we're going to keep it secret. And this guy's going to become famous one day. And yes. Zach knows who I am talking about.
Yes.
And I'm sorry for the subtlety, but he is not in the trash bin. He's very much in the gold
mine. Good. He can't. Yeah, he can't live there.
And anyway, so we had this idea. This character existed within this fake self-help book that we created called The Book of Humor. And for some reason or another, we had this ridiculous idea that as a companion to our satire of The Book of Humor, we were going to make a skateboarding montage video. In 2008, we were going to make a skateboarding montage video. Granted, neither one of us had picked up a skateboard in probably 4 or 5 years, right? Like we were
let alone good at it when we did pick it up.
Right. Let alone, you know, the fact that we weren't active skateboarders. We just thought, you know, we would pick up skateboards and, you know, we were both athletes. So we'd be doing kick flips, heel flips, pop shove-its, grinding rails, like no problem. Like we were just going to do this. And it was for some reason or another, I don't know why we thought this skate video was going to be so funny. All I remember is Zach, you busted out your old skateboard. We like tried skateboarding in your basement for a good like 40 minutes. And it was like, dude, this is never going to happen.
This is a lot harder than I remember it being.
So anyway, that idea of a skate video crossed over with a comedy project was scrapped. And that is probably going to forever stay in the trash.
Oh, man. We had big ideas, man.
Unless anyone listening out there is a very good skateboarder who would like to team up with Steel Lake Studio and make this dream become a reality. But for now, it is in the trash bin.
Oh, man. Good times, dude. Oh, the skateboarding days.
When was the last time you even thought about that?
Oh, probably the moment that we were like, we're not doing this. That was probably the last time I thought about that. Because it became very real that we could not do it. We were just like, we are so bad. Also, how like the idea of mixing a skateboard video in with our like satire project. It was just like, what? All right, we're just
a bad idea.
We're just throwing things now at this. See what happens here.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a bad idea, and we were young, you know, just ambitious. Like 17 and 18, and we had ambitions, but not necessarily great ideas.
Yeah. we needed a creative outlet for all of them just to see what would happen.
But I think that kind of leaves us with the trash bin. We'll come back to that at another time, but for now, we are going to get into our main topic of Final Fantasy VII. So the game Final Fantasy VII, for those of you who don't know, is a pretty big, well-known game, right? Is the big game that came out on the PlayStation 1 in 1997, and it was pretty iconic and pretty shifting in the video game market. And I'll explain some of that why, but Zach, you have never played Final Fantasy VII. Correct.
Final Fantasy VII. I have a funny story about thinking I was getting Final Fantasy VII, but I can tell that.
Okay. That'll be good here as we kind of go through our initial impact with it.
Yeah.
But something that we're going to do from time to time here on Steel Lake, on the Parallel Quest, is we are going to have discussions of something that one of us really loved and something that might either be new or foreign to the other host, so that it kind of adds a dynamic where we can have a discussion back and forth. And so this is one of those things.
Yeah.
I am very much in love with Final Fantasy VII. Zach knows about it. He's heard of it. He's familiar with it, but he's never played it or experienced it.
Yes.
And we're going to have a discussion from that angle. But do you mind if I start off with doing a little bit of history for anyone who's unfamiliar?
I am like the listener right now. So,
all right.
Lay on the history.
So for anyone who is interested in this, and if video games aren't your cup of tea, I encourage you to continue to listen, because these are things that are important to us. And as you get to know, our influence is more when we eventually get our story-focused podcasts out or any books we publish out, you'll kind of know where some of our influences come from. And Final Fantasy VII is huge for me. This is a game that was released on the PlayStation 1 in 1997. Had a huge marketing budget behind it. From what I have heard, one of the largest marketing campaigns in video game history. And up to that point, more marketing dollars had been spent on Final Fantasy VII than any game that came before it. So this came out in 97 on the PlayStation 1. It was very much this big, big deal. And even to this day, Final Fantasy VII is the best-selling game in the Final Fantasy franchise, which has like 15 main installment games and a billion side games. And there's a lot of Final Fantasy games, which makes its name a complete oxymoron.
Yeah.
Every
I was
going to
ask
one.
You about that. Yeah. Final Fantasy 900.
So the history of Final Fantasy and why the name is actually important is because it goes back to the game's founder and original creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, who made the game, the original Final Fantasy, for the NES for a company named Squaresoft. And Squaresoft was in a very, very bad financial position. They had tried to make some games that weren't very successful, and they really weren't a video game company. They were doing something else with electronics, and I can't remember what it is off the top of my head. But Hironobu Sakaguchi wanted to make this game that was influenced by role-playing games, and he even mentions Dungeons & Dragons being one of the things that was a big influence of the first Final Fantasy. And so it was like the last shot, right? This was going to be the Final Fantasy. It was the make-or-break game. If this game was successful, Squaresoft might survive. If it wasn't, they could go under.
The end of the company.
And so that's kind of the history behind the name, and kind of cool, right? Because it was a success rather than a failure.
Yeah.
And so these games
could have been the final Square. What is it, Square Enix? Is that what he said?
It's Square Enix now, but okay. At the time it was Squaresoft, and then two companies came together, Squaresoft and Enix. They came together, and now they're Square Enix.
Nice.
Yeah, very creative in the renaming.
Yes. they're killing these names, Final Fantasy and Square Enix. This is
yeah,
great.
Yeah. And so this is a pretty neat story. I really respect Hironobu Sakaguchi as a creator, because he is on record saying he never really saw himself as a great game designer. Like, he was never going to create the next Mario. He was never going to create the next great platformer or next great action game. He saw himself as being able to better tell a story. And so that's why I think he's really influential to me, because he looked at video games as an avenue to tell a story. And that's very much what I think the focus of the Final Fantasy games are, to tell these adventurous stories, allow you to roleplay in the various different character roles you choose to have in your party. So that's a little bit of history on the Final Fantasy series. And they were coming off pretty good success with games on the NES and the Super NES. And then in 1997, they were coming out with what was going to be their biggest game ever made. They were transitioning not only onto a new platform, but 3D graphics for the first time. They were using new technology. They were learning how to make character models in 3D in order to make the game look good and have it fit all on a compact disc. They experimented with how they were going to do the backgrounds, which is why if you ever play the game, you have what are called pre-rendered backgrounds, which are basically these watercolor paintings that the 3D models kind of move over, right? So it's like a 2D background, but 3D models. And they were kind of the first company to do that. And it's actually an aesthetic that I think holds up decently well. And, you know, people have different opinions on that, but I think it's pretty cool. And so for me as a kid, I always loved these RPGs because my brothers played them. And Final Fantasy VII was the game that made RPGs cool. Like if you were playing Final Fantasies 1 through 6, or in the United States, we actually only had 3. So Final Fantasy 1 was the actual Final Fantasy 1. The Final Fantasy 2 we got in the United States is actually Final Fantasy 4. And the Final Fantasy 3 we got in the US is actually Final Fantasy 6.
Oh my goodness.
Because they thought that those games would be successful on the American market, while the other ones they didn't think would be successful on the American market or so something like that.
Have you played the true Final Fantasy 2 then?
I have never played Final Fantasy 2 or 3. I've played 1, 4, 5, 6, 7. I've only made it through a little bit of 8. I've played 9. I've played 10, 12, 13. And 15. Oh, so I've goodness. Played most of them. I love these games, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm starting to love the new ones a lot less, which every new one that comes out, because they're different teams now. They're made by different people, and they don't have the same charm that they used to.
Yeah.
And I'm getting older. You know, like it just happens.
Right. So just so I can get this straight. So would 4, which you've played, right?
Yes.
Is that the true Japanese 4, or is that like a different Japanese?
Yes. So Final Fantasy 4. So right now, if you were to go out and buy any of these on the iPhone or the Android, for example, because I think like you could buy 1 through 9 and they all can play on
your phone?
On your phone, yeah. Like they've got a game for each of them, like a
That's
phone
insane.
Version. The graphics are terrible and the interface is ugly as all get out, but no, the story is still intact and
yeah,
decently well.
That's
but
crazy.
They're actually, all the numbering system is true to the actual chronological release now. So like, if you go out and play Final Fantasy IV on your phone, you're playing Final Fantasy IV, but when it was released in the United States in 1992 for the Super Nintendo, it was called Final Fantasy II.
Got it. Okay.
Makes sense. So now everything's the right number. Everything's in the right order.
Okay. Okay. It's a very large project.
Yeah. Yeah. And so 7 comes out and it made these role-playing games really cool. And at this time, we have, and you know, this is 2020 and we adopt new technology a lot faster than we used to. I remember when the PlayStation 1 came out in 1995, we asked my parents for one and it was like $300. No way. That is way too expensive. You guys are not getting one of those. And
PlayStation
and so we,
1.
We
so
didn't.
Funny.
You know, we didn't, and we didn't get one for a long time. And I remember that it was Christmas, I think, of 1998. My brother had just saved up a bunch of money and bought himself a PlayStation 1 the previous summer because he wanted to play Final Fantasy VII. And I, for some reason or another, he didn't buy it for himself when he bought the PlayStation 1. But I remember Christmas of 1998, he got Final Fantasy VII. And I remember I got all of my gifts and they were cool, but I was obsessed with this game that Eric had because it was this CD case and it has this dude with this giant sword on his back, this blonde spiky hair, and he's just looking up at this giant industrial building. And I was just enamored with the artwork on the cover, and I was like, whatever that is, I have to play it. And so that was the first time I ever saw Final Fantasy VII and kind of was like, oh, so this is a new Final Fantasy game. But I was familiar with playing 1, 2, and 3 in the United States. So I was like, well, what happened to the other four? You know? Like,
yeah.
where did those go? And so eventually, you know, all of that stuff got sorted out. Don't know how the knowledge came to me, but over time, it all started to make sense. So that's a little history of Final Fantasy VII and my first exposure with it. So, Zach, tell me about your experience of wanting to play Final Fantasy VII. Is yeah. that what you said it was, or thinking you were going to get it or something?
I knew about it from a friend who was really into video games. He's actually the same friend. If you guys have listened to our Dragon Ball Z episode, he was the same guy that recorded all the Dragon Ball Z episodes on his VHSs. He was also the guy, he was my only friend and still is, that owns every single game system. He religiously buys every single one. And if you go to his apartment right now, I guarantee you can go all the way back and play like the Super Nintendo, just because he's collected all of them. He just collects systems and games and everything. So he had one of the Final Fantasy games at the time. And I was like, this is cool. Like, I wasn't super into RPGs at the time, especially like JRPGs, which are a little different. But I was like, this is a cool like environment. I liked kind of the steampunky environment that it had. It was just cool. And so later, it wasn't at that time that I decided I wanted to start playing Final Fantasy. It was a little later. And I remember I was like, okay, I want to play it. So I told my parents about it. And like trying to tell your parents about what game you want and what the title of it is like trying to tell like a foreigner in your own language when they don't really understand it, like directions. So it just kind of got lost in translation. I was like, I want Final Fantasy. And it didn't help also that like at the time there were 60 of them out. So I was like, I want Final Fantasy, whatever. And they went out and they bought me The Legend of Dragoon, which...
Oh, damn it. Dude, that's a good game. I
which
like
was
that game.
Awesome. It was a great game, but it was not Final Fantasy at all. And so I remember opening, because like it had the same box, like it had the big box, and I got it for Christmas. I was like, oh, I know what this is. Like, I'm finally going to get to play it. And I opened it up and I was like, what is this? They're like, it's the game you asked for. I was like, no, it's not. This says Legend of Dragoon on it. And so I didn't end up getting to play Final Fantasy, but in turn, I also got to play one of my favorite video games of all time that I've never finished because the game is so long, but I got to play Legend of Dragoon. And so I played that game well into college too.
Wow. Like there's that, yeah. Dude, that makes me so happy that you've played that game, because I've never talked to anybody else who's played it. Like, I know, like, if people come and listen to this because they see it's Final Fantasy VII and they're fans of Final Fantasy VII, like, the games go hand in hand, right? A lot of people have heard of Legend of Dragoon. But just, like, in passing, I can't believe we've never had this conversation. I
really
love that game. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I've never met anyone else who also has played that game. Like, every time I try and explain the game to people, they're like, oh, yeah, it sounds like Final Fantasy. I'm like, no, it's not. Yes, I know. It's a common misconception. My parents thought the same thing. But no, it's
incredible.
Not. But it's awesome because I love the gameplay in that one. I know this is an episode about Final Fantasy, but Dragoon had a cool fighting, like, battle sequence system where you got to, like, actually participate in, like, your combos and attacking the enemy rather than just like selecting the attack you wanted and then watching it happen. You got to like be an active member in fight. And the story was so good and so rich and deep, and it was like complex. Oh, it's such a good game. It's just the unfortunate thing is it's like four discs long, and I got to about two and I was like, man, this game is just going. And like, this is when I started playing it again in college, because I was like, I gotta finish it. And I got further than I ever had before in college, and I still couldn't finish the game because I was like, this is so long. Like, this is, I'm sinking hours. And I'm just one of those people who, like, I like video games, but I'm not the one to, I'm not going to sink over 100 hours into a game to be, I mean, I'll get close to that, but I, like, my buddy who I wanted to get Final Fantasy because of him, he will play like fights, like boss battles over and over again. And I remember one time, I think he's playing Metal Gear Solid. He was like, yeah, I spent that fight scene took 6 hours for me to beat. I was like, you spent 6 hours on one boss battle, one fight, just doing the same fight over and over again. He's like, yeah, 6 hours, man. It took a lot, but you know, I'm past it now. And like, I think I still got about like 45 hours left in the game. I was like, oh my gosh, like that is insanity, dude. What That's level crazy. Are you playing on?
Man, dude, I love that story about Final Fantasy VII. It just, and I like that I'm hearing that for the first time on the podcast. It's like another Jason Isaacs moment.
Yes.
Back-to-back podcast. Like, this is incredible.
Yeah, I never got to play it, but I came close.
You got so close.
So
basically,
close.
Legend of Dragoon is like Final Fantasy meets Power Rangers.
Yes, and that's a perfect way. Perfect way of describing it.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah. But then I eventually got to play Final Fantasy X or whatever briefly. I actually didn't even get to play it truly. I just played my friend's file and he let me play the Smash Ball or whatever that thing's called, because I like that game.
Blitzball,
yeah. So I that's the only thing I've played in that game. So I've been close. Still have yet to play Final Fantasy.
Yeah. Yeah, and Final Fantasy games have been very important to my creative development, because they always, except for like the newer ones, because the newer ones, anyone out there who likes them, like 13 and 15, I actually like the MMO 14. I like that quite a bit. My brother and I played that quite a bit, and we had a really good time. But they are just so different. And I know we talked about Dragon Ball Z and how much we enjoyed that. But to be honest, as a just honest critique, I cannot get into the anime style voice acting in most things. And when that came over into Final Fantasy with 13, I was like, oh no.
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 What's
happening to the games I love? And you know, it's just not for me. It's just a style that I don't love. And anyone out there who really enjoys it, I totally get it. There's a massive fan base of people who love anime.
So is the art style anime?
The graphics in Final Fantasy games have always been top notch. They've always kind of been, they've always tried to set the bar. The bar has been set by Final Fantasy. And so they are really good looking games, but sometimes the voice acting is just a little bit too reliant on the anime style in the newer ones. Although 15, I think they tried to have better voice acting. The story was just a mess. It was a mess. No. But we're talking about Final Fantasy VII, which is great. So
take me through the story, man. I don't know the story behind.
All right, so I'm going to give a little bit of the story. And what I am going to say is that when I first played this game, I was 9 years old. And the story just didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I knew the overarching plot. I knew the bad guy Sephiroth had this giant katana sword, and he was just terrifying. My favorite characters were Cloud, because he had the big buster sword, Barrett, because he had a gun on his arm, and then Red 13, because he was a dog. So,
nice.
That was my crew.
Nice.
The first time through, and then come to find out there was just some better characters. But anyway, the story of the game is basically you start off and you're on this bombing mission. Essentially, you've teamed up with a eco-terrorist group called Avalanche. And when I say you, I'm talking about the character Cloud, because Cloud is basically the avatar of yourself, right? He's the main character in the story, and player agency all happens through Cloud. And what he is he's this soldier, this ex-soldier who has, you know, this high training and this private military group of the Shinra Corporation. The Shinra Corporation is basically this power company that is super wealthy, super successful, and they just dominate over this huge city called Midgar. And basically what they've done is they've divided the city up into wealthy and poor, and the poor people live in the slums, and they're having to deal with all of the drawback of basically the fact that Midgar is ruining the planet, because what they're doing is they're sucking energy out of the planet. It's called Mako energy, or Mako energy, whatever you want to call it. I'm not 100% sure. M-A-K-O. And so they suck it out of the planet and they use that to power the city. But what it's doing is it's killing the planet, right? It's causing, you know, monsters to rise up. It's causing the planet to die. Eventually it's going to be destroyed. And so Avalanche is going around and they're trying to bomb the various different reactor cores in the city of Midgar because they want to shut them down because they're killing the planet. So essentially, Cloud teams up with a group of terrorists as a mercenary. And then after your first mission is a success, the next mission is not quite a success. The wheels start to come off of this whole thing. You almost get caught and captured. And then you do get captured. And when you're captured, you are all of a sudden let out of your jail cell. And you notice that there's just blood everywhere. It's blood everywhere. And you get out and you're like, what the heck happened here? And you've come to find out Sephiroth had gone through, just like killed everybody in the Shinra Corporation who was there at the time. And so you have to run away. You take the opportunity to escape. And you get away. You go to this town. And then Cloud tells everybody about his history, who he is, his background, how he knows Sephiroth. And so it's this story about how this group of terrorists go from terrorizing, and then because of their activities, they get captured. In their capture, they get let go. And as they're let go, they find out that Sephiroth is trying to basically summon this meteor to come and destroy the planet. And so then your journey goes from trying to save the planet from Shinra to trying to save the planet from Shinra and Sephiroth. And in a nutshell, that is what Final Fantasy VII is. There's a lot of twists and turns throughout it, but if I got into all of it, it wouldn't make a lot of sense to anyone who's not familiar with the story, and you would be a little overwhelmed.
So is Sephiroth, that's his name, right?
Yeah, that's the bad guy. The guy with the long silver hair.
That's right. Yeah. I remember him from the movie that I watched, Advent Child, which was one of the animated videos that came out around, I don't know what Final Fantasy was out, but I remember they released the movie because, to me, how it was explained is they're showing off the animation that they're capable of. Because one thing that was always awesome about the Final Fantasy games that I watched my friend play were the cutscenes and the graphics were just like, oh man, this looks awesome. Like, this looks real. So they basically made a whole movie that was just like the cutscenes, and he was the bad guy in that. And I just remembered like that long skinny sword was just like so cool. But is he like a third party person in this game? Is that his like deal? Is like, I'm bad because I want to destroy the earth. He's not working.
He's bad because he finds out that basically his power and who he is the result of a lot of scientific experimentation on him. He's the son of...
He's like a Mewtwo kind of character.
Yeah, he's the son of a crazy scientist, and this crazy scientist used basically these parts from this evil alien who attacked the planet a long time ago, Genova, to try and... Basically, he used Genova to experiment with life forms to see if you introduce Genova cells to a life form, what it does to it, and supposedly he experimented on Sephiroth a little bit.
Okay, so he's like part like God.
Yeah, I mean he's and the story has a lot of like complications. It relies on the fact that also Cloud has lost a good chunk of his memory, so there's a pretty big plot twist through the middle of the story. And one thing I'll say about Final Fantasy VII, where it is strong, where I think a lot of RPGs and a lot of Final Fantasy games are not strong, is that the story actually remains pretty interesting throughout. Unfortunately, in these big, epic, long video games, I feel like they start with a bang, but the story kind of peters out as you go on. Almost as if they had a really good concept and idea, and then time gets crunched, and it's like, oh gosh, we got to get this video game done. And the story kind of falls away, and it becomes hard to kind of stick with it. Like how you couldn't stick with Legend of Dragoon.
Yes.
I feel like that happens to me a lot with a lot of these longer games. Like the story is just, it's not as engaging. The gameplay feels really grindy, so I'm just going to stop.
Yeah.
And so I just want to take this opportunity to talk about, because on Parallel Quest, we really like to talk about the impact of these things.
I was going to ask you, why does this convoluted, crazy story, why does this resonate with you at 9 years old?
Yeah. The story to me didn't really make any sense at 9 years old. The story actually didn't make much sense to me until I replayed through it while I was in college.
Okay. Slightly.
But here's why it was really important. I love these big, epic, adventurous games. And when I was six, my parents got divorced. 2 years later, we moved out of the house that was like our big family house. And we moved just across town, and we were in this neighborhood where I didn't know anybody. I didn't have any friends. I lived on a cul-de-sac with some pretty nice kids, but I just didn't make any connections with a lot of people. The kids who were kind of close to my age, their house was kind of like the trouble house. I could have podcasts for days and days and days about all of the crazy things I was exposed to at that home. That my innocent 9-year-old brain didn't need to know.
And so
I kind of found myself not really, you know, having many friends, which is crazy because I've always kind of been like a pretty social guy and have always made friends pretty easily, but was in a place where I just, you know, was kind of lonely. And so I remember my brother had this game. And he wasn't playing it at the time. And I was like, I've always wanted to play this. I've watched him play it so much. So I remember starting it when I was towards the end of my third grade year, and just playing it like every day after school. Like this was Final Fantasy VII essentially became my best friend during this time of life. And I remember having to ask Eric to help me all of the time, and I'm sure he thought I was super annoying. But at the time, he had a broken leg and he couldn't move. He couldn't go anywhere. So
he's like, I can't get away from this kid.
but I remember just loving the adventure and loved when new characters joined the party and just loved the imagination and awoken my sense of how big a video game could be and how it could tell a really big story and how cool it could be. And the character designs really resonated with me and made me want to sketch and draw and kind of make my own things. And it was really neat. And then we actually only lived in that house for a year. And we moved the following summer. And we moved into the house that you know that I grew up into.
Yes.
My mom ended up actually meeting my stepdad. And they ended up getting married and getting a house. And I lived a really good life. But I remember going to school and being nervous because I was changing schools again. And next to me, there was a kid reading a Game Informer magazine, and he was reading an article on Final Fantasy IX, actually, Final Fantasy IX, because at this time, Final Fantasy IX was going to be coming out. And I told him, I was like, I'm excited about Final Fantasy IX. In fact, I think my brother's going to buy it. You should come over and play it sometime. And I remember there's the first kid I really interacted with in a long time. It was the first really good friend I met, and he and I, we actually just went out to lunch a couple months ago, so it's still someone I talk to, and all connected over Final Fantasy. So we started playing 9 because that was the new hotness, but I told him, I was like, you want to play a real good game, you got to play Final Fantasy 7. And so I remember he borrowed it from me, he played through the whole thing, and then we were just obsessed at that point. And so that's why it's important to me. It was a game that just kind of helped me through a lonely time. And yeah. And it didn't need to make sense. It was just something that kept me out of trouble and kept me at home, got me a relationship with my brother, and introduced me to a really good friend that I needed a little while later. So that's a reason why it's really important to me. And I will still go back and play it from time to time. And yeah.
That really is the cool thing about video games, that I don't think it's overlooked, but sometimes gets lost, I think, in the hype of like the new system, the new graphics, the new gameplay, like the new kind of gadget coming out. It's just like for us when we were younger, it was just a way of hanging out and connecting. Sometimes when we had no friends, or sometimes when we had one friend, just it was a way of bonding and sharing something that we liked and something that we all really cared about. And just it was cool to finally meet someone else that was like, oh, you like this just as much as I do. Like, you just want to read about it. Even just bringing, like, I remember when one of the Halo games came out, all of my friends in school had brought in the little booklets that used to come in the front of the video games. Yeah. Like they had you didn't need to read them, but it was just like, this is what this weapon is. And this is what and it was just like little, like just tidbits about the game. And we'd all sit around and read them. And it was just like those bonding moments of like just sharing something that another person equally shared that same passion for.
Right.
So that's really cool, man, that Final Fantasy led to a friendship that's lasted for so long.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I think it's made such an impact, and it's still something that my brother and I connect over. You know, we'll still talk about the Final Fantasy games, and sometimes we'll complain about how they've lost track and they're not the same as they were when we were kids. And you know, it's cool. And that's why I think from a story perspective, even though I can say video games don't tell the best stories, they don't. They're typically not the best because a video game has to focus on being good at so many things. Mm. If a book or a movie had to focus on being as good at as many things as a video game did, you probably wouldn't have as good of stories in those either, right? Because there's just a lot to juggle. But yeah. I will say, like you were mentioning, there's something about the shared experience of video games that can bring people together that books and movies don't do to the same degree. Like, the reality is, if you go to work and you start talking about how much you love the Marvel movies, there's a good chance there's going to be a lot of people who are right there with you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to work and you say how much you love Final Fantasy, you're going to make maybe one or two really, really good friends. You know what I'm saying? Guy. Like, you'll get a lot of good acquaintances as a Marvel movie fan. But if you show up talking about how you think that Kefka's the greatest villain of all time in Final Fantasy VI, then you got a lifelong friend.
You got a best friend.
It's a little different. So I think anyone who discredits video games as either a storytelling avenue or even says video games couldn't tell good stories, I think you really have to play through one before making that judgment and spend some time in talking to people who love video game stories as well. There's one last thing I want to share about Final Fantasy VII, but before I do that, do you have any comments, interjections, questions?
No, man, I loved hearing about it. I feel like I'm learning a lot about obviously Final Fantasy, but like a side of you. Like, we've never really talked about Final Fantasy just because I've never played it, and it's something that you're really passionate about. So this is this is a treat for me just to hear about the game. It kind of makes me want to play it, to be honest. I unfortunately only have a Wii Switch or whatever it's called.
Go get it on Steam, man. Final Fantasy 7 on Steam.
Well, the fact that you said I could play them on my phone, not 7, but maybe some other ones. Maybe if I could go get them on Steam. I could. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, they're on Steam, most of them. They're basically the same version as you would get on your phone, but I prefer playing on a slightly bigger screen.
Yeah, maybe I'll do that.
They're relatively inexpensive. But if you're going to get into any JRPG that's on Steam, I would recommend Chrono Trigger over all of them.
Oh,
that's just me.
Oh, dude. That Chrono Trigger is sweet, man. Chrono Trigger is sweet.
It's the one I would recommend. But we're going to wrap up on Final Fantasy VII with this very last story from me, and I'll be brief about it. Final Fantasy VII, its lasting impact, and how does it hold up? I think it holds up extremely well. This podcast will probably go live after the remake has already been out or is very close to being out, and I'm not sure when I'm going to get a chance to play it. I would really like to wait to play it till I have a good chunk of time off and just be able to just, you know, go through it.
Yeah.
You know? And maybe in the summer or something.
It's a remake of seven.
It's a remake of seven. Yes. Oh. Like from the ground up remake. You should go watch a trailer. The game looks, as far as graphics go, is jaw dropping. Wow, this is a video game. It legitimately looks like this is made by a film animation studio. Like that's how good it looks.
Oh, man.
And so I got an ear infection a few months back, and I was just down for the count. Like, I couldn't really move without being disoriented and having huge headaches. So I had to sit on the couch for an entire weekend.
Oh,
and Zach, I've already told you this story. So I have Final Fantasy VII on my PlayStation 4, and they have this feature on the PlayStation 4 and on the Steam version, I think, where you can play the game at 3 times the normal speed, which is incredible if you've played through it before. And they also have a feature where you can just heal your characters and not have to use potions and stuff on them. Like, granted, that is totally cheating, but when you've beaten the game legitimately and you're just doing it to get a refresher on the story, whatever. Even if you're doing it for the first time, you're playing the game for the first time and you just want the story, you want to use the cheats, go ahead, enjoy the story. And so I played through it and I beat the game in like an entire weekend. And I kid you not, like I was just on the couch just sitting there and
grinding,
you know, my kids would come in and sit with me from time to time. And I'd like be explaining to them what's going on.
They're like, all right, man.
And so anyway, I played through the entire game on 3x speed. And I think that the game's story holds up pretty well. Now, the gameplay is totally old school and archaic and probably boring for most people who aren't used to like turn-based style combat, but the story I still think is one of the best ones in a Final Fantasy game. I think it's really complex. It's really involved. Some people criticize it for having way too many plot holes, and I understand that, but the nostalgia just comes through and I overlook all of those things. And it was a good time. It was a good experience. And that was the last time I've played it. And to be honest, this is not to take anything away from the remake. I played through the original and I was like, man, it just still is so good. Mm. I don't think this game needs to be remade. Now, I think it's going to be great, but here's the catch with the remake. The first game in the remake is only going to be like the first, maybe fifth of the game, because it only takes place in like the first part of the game.
So they're releasing it. So they're remaking it and releasing it in multiple parts.
Yes. And with how long it's taken them to make this, I just have no optimism that they'll ever finish the actual story. So it's like, how much do I really want to start? And when I know, because Square Enix, they're terrible at getting anything done on time. Or, you know, like,
yes,
it could be another 5 years before you get a sequel. And at the rate they're going, there's a good chance I could be in my 40s before yeah. before the series is done.
Second installment comes out.
My kids will be going off to college. I'll have other things to worry about, you know?
Yeah.
So, huh. Yeah, that's kind of my thoughts there.
Yeah. Well, what is it? Is it coming out for the new generation of PlayStation?
It's a PlayStation 4 game. So it's going to be a PlayStation 4 exclusive for a set amount of time. And then I think they're going to release it on, you know, Steam, Xbox, whatever they're able to port it to.
Okay. Because they're coming out with that new PlayStation. And they're cutting it kind of close here.
Yeah. My guess is what they're going to do is you'd probably be able to play it on both. I think that, like, you're going to be able to play your PlayStation 4 stuff on 5. So maybe they'll have a patch where the graphics will be slightly upgraded for the 5 or something.
I heard you couldn't play PlayStation 1 games on the new one coming out.
You can't, man. You cannot. You can't play... on the new one coming out? I don't know that.
On PlayStation 5, or whatever they're going to call it, probably PlayStation 5, I heard, and please don't quote me on this, but I just heard from someone at work that you wouldn't be able to play PlayStation 1 games on it. And I was like, that's kind of a bummer, because like Spyro and Crash Bandicoot. And
Well, they've remastered all those games.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, PlayStation 1 was the last PlayStation I played, so to me, I'm still stuck back in like blocky graphic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, man, Spyro, that's times. Another game. I think they've got that on Steam, too.
Oh, it's such a good game. Such a good game.
But let's go into our conclusion segment, Zach, and let's kick it over to you. So what are you reading? What are you watching? What are you playing? What are you doing in your free time? What story are you enjoying this week?
What story am I enjoying this week? I mean, I've been talking about it the whole podcast. I'm loving Breath of the Wild, man. It is an awesome game. I probably have talked about it before too, but here's the thing that you will all learn about me, all you listeners out there, is it takes me forever to complete video games. Like this, especially the scope and the size of Breath of the Wild, this game's going to take me a while. So I'll probably be geeking out on it over and over again. I know probably most people have it beaten, moved on. They're probably making another Zelda game that's already coming out, but I'm going to be playing this one for a while. I'm really loving the world. I love the fact that it is open world, and I love and hate the fact that I actually have to like walk and unlock the different little areas on the map. It's interesting to me because I'm used to the old Zelda games that kind of held your hand on what you were supposed to do next. It was very like, this is where you're going, and this is who you have to talk to, and this is what you have to do. And they did that a little bit at the beginning of this one, and then you get to that point where it's like, okay, you're free, and you just like 20 different options to follow pop up, and I'm like, I don't know which one's the best one. And I spent a lot of my time just climbing the mountains, because I like jumping off and using my little glider. So I spent a lot. It's kind of the Skyrim symptom here, where I'm just like kind of not doing the main thing, and I just like going off and doing my own thing. So this game could take me a while, but I'm really enjoying Breath of the Wild. How about you, man? What are you reading, watching, playing?
Well, I got something written down here. Although I'm gonna ask you before I jump in, are you reading any good books? Any good books you're reading right now?
What am I reading? I actually just started reading an H.P. Lovecraft short story compendium. So it's like five of his really well-known short stories.
Are they Cthulhu stories?
One's called The Call of Cthulhu. That's like one of his big baddies. There's a handful of others. I've always really liked him. I think he's really gotten a boost from... He's just got like this cult following now. Like it just came out of nowhere, but H.P. Lovecraft, everything. And I'm not really sure what like the obsession was, but it kind of caught me too, because I was like, well, this is cool. Like cosmic horror, like aliens and stuff. I like aliens. So yeah, he's got an interesting writing style. It's very like Edgar Allan Poe-esque. So it's that like kind of old, very formal writing, but yeah. He's got a way of just like gripping you at times where you're just like, whoa, this is getting weird. Nothing too like horrifying. It gets to a point where she's like, whoa, this is this is getting really weird now. But it's, yeah, I'm reading that at the moment. I don't know if I would recommend it. It's just something that I had lying around and I was like, oh yeah, HP, I'll read him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've never really had any interest in reading Lovecraft. I'm familiar with his intellectual property. It's not my style, not my thing.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
What I was going to throw in there is the growth and popularity of Lovecraftian literature. I think that's the beauty of the internet. You know, I think that there's always been people who've liked stuff like that, you know, who you have your niche markets, right? I think Final Fantasy is kind of like a niche crowd as well, but you're able to form a community over the internet. And all of a sudden it's like, something seems like it's more popular than it ever was. And it's like, well, it was always kind of liked by these groups of people. It just, they're able to be connected now, you know, because it's something that's got a good following, but it's not mainstream, right? And the internet allows something with a smaller following to still have some recognition, which is cool. And I think that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a good point, man. Like the birth of the internet and getting these communities and forums up, I'm sure has had a major influence on the marketing of all HP, a lot of Cthulhu stuff, especially. Yeah. I mean, you can get a Cthulhu board game, dice, like anything you think of, I bet they have it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Which is neat. And I'm reading something kind of the complete opposite of Lovecraft. I'm actually going through the audiobook now of The Two Towers.
Yes.
I don't have a whole lot of audiobooks, so I actually kind of listen to the same ones over again at work. You know, I've got the whole Lord of the Rings series. I've got a couple of like Christian books. I've got one book that's like on the history of video games. And
oh, nice.
Anyway, I kind of cycle through them because I'm currently not subscribed to Audible. But anyway, listening through The Two Towers, and one thing I'm going to say every time I read through The Two Towers, I think this is my fourth time through it. Appreciate the conversation between Treebeard and Merry and Pippin more every time.
Oh, yes.
I remember the first time I read it, I was like, I can't get through this fast enough. Just get me to the Battle of Helm's Deep. I want to read about orcs dying. And now I'm like, I'm enjoying this journey through the woods with Treebeard and Merry and Pippin and learning about all this really in-depth lore that Tolkien took the time to make. And it's like, oh, this is enjoyable.
Yes. So, oh, that's a good part, man.
Yeah. So that's what I'm reading. And then this weekend, while we were on our adventure in Chicago, I don't know why, but the whole entire week, probably a little longer than a week, I've just been really itching to watch Tropic Thunder again. I don't know if I should be talking about this on the podcast because it's a super controversial movie for the times we live in.
It's the funniest movie I've ever seen.
Here's the thing I'll say about Tropic Thunder, and if this movie offends you in any way, shape, or form, I'm sorry that this is nothing against you, but I think Tropic Thunder is literally a mastercraft of comedy. Like, I really do. It's very aware of itself. It's very aware of the people that it is making a satire out of, and it is just, it's so funny. And so I watched it with my wife, and that was the first time she saw it. She did not think it was as funny as I did.
Dude, every
but she did laugh for sure.
Every wife that I have like talked to, like my buddies' wives, like every wife has had the same reaction of like, this is not funny. And I'm like, and every husband has been like, this is the funniest movie I've ever seen. Like, what is it, man? Like, I think it's, I agree with you. I think it is a mastercraft in satire. It is a brilliant movie. It's so funny. And I always say this too, that I say that Tropic Thunder is the funniest movie I've ever seen. I think Hot Rod has made me laugh more than any other movie. Like, I laugh a lot in Tropic Thunder, but I think Hot Rod I laugh more in, but I think Tropic Thunder is a funnier movie. It's a smarter, funnier, too.
And the thing is there's so many subtle things that aren't, they're not punchline funny, but the fact that Robert Downey Jr.'s character is the voice of reason and the plan maker in the movie makes no sense.
I'm just a dude who's inside a dude playing another dude.
He literally has such a complex that he's so invested in taking on the character he plays that he becomes the voice of reason because that's the character he would have been playing in the movie. But in reality, the real person, Kirk Lazarus or whatever, is a complete psycho. Like,
absolute psycho.
It's so subtly hilarious that if you don't take the time to think about it, you might miss it. But it's like, because it does such a good job of kind of sucking you in and being like, oh yeah, you should be listening to him. He's got good advice, right? Give the guy the map, who knows how to read a map. And then you think about it, it's like, wait a minute, no, he's a white dude who went got surgery so that he could play a black guy in a movie. He's a terrible person.
Yeah, and his personal life is he's just psychotic. He really is. He's
right.
Just
a yeah.
Dude, like it is. Oh, it's so funny, man. It's that I'm glad you got to watch that. Is that the first time or second time or
that? So that was the third time I've seen it. The first time I saw it, my brother-in-law at the time had got it for Christmas from my dad, and he and my sister had gone to bed, and me and my brothers Eric and Wally stayed up that night and were like, "Hey, let's watch Matt's movie." And so we opened up his Christmas gift and watched Tropic Thunder, and we were just dying. We were just dying.
I forgot. The first time I watched it was with you.
Was it?
Yeah, it was you, me, and another buddy, and we watched it in your basement. That was the first time I saw Tropic Thunder.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
That was the first time, now that I think about it. That was the first time I saw that movie. Oh, man,
There's a chance it was like a couple days after I watched it with my brother. My two brothers, because I think my brother-in-law ended up leaving it at our house for like a really long time because he obviously didn't care about watching Tropic Thunder. But that movie,
good movie, man, good watch.
Movie's good, hilarious. Take notes if you're a comedy filmmaker.
Yeah,
but anyway, I think that's a wrap. Thank you all for listening. We are so appreciative of the time that you give us to listen to us talk about the stories we love, how they impact our lives. If you have some time, we have our website up. That's steellakestudio.com. Head over there, check it out. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast. If you wouldn't mind telling a friend or two about us, we're just starting off. We're trying to get an audience, and we're trying to get feedback from anyone who's listening on how we're doing, some discussions that you would like us to have, maybe some stories you'd like us to talk about, tell you whether or not we've read it, watched it, heard it, played it, whatever it is, want to talk to us. We'd love for you to reach out to us at steellakestudio.com. Zach, any final closing words for our listener before we head out?
Once again, guys, just thank you for listening. Go play some Final Fantasy.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Parallel Quest. Please be sure to head over to our website, steellakestudio.com, where you can find out more about other things that we do. Also, we'd love to connect with you via Facebook, so check us out, Steel Lake Studio on Facebook. Thank you to Jake Butler for our bumper music, and we'll see you next time on Parallel Quest.